Coming up on the show today, Israel has hospitals in Gaza surrounded.
There is no service for pediatric patients in the northern area. 5 kids in the pediatric ICU left alone in Rantisa Hospital, and we don't know what's going on with them. The communication were lost, so they might be dead or alive.
Plus, the latest from Ukraine.
I woke up personally of a sound of explosion, and it was quite a strong sound of explosion.
And later, a conversation with a mayor in southern Israel, a look at peace prospects in the Pacific, and is tuberculosis making a comeback? Today is Monday, November 13th, and this is VOA's Flashpoint, Global Crises. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. The latest from Ukraine and the Pacific coming up later in the show. We begin, though, in the Middle East. The world is again rattled by the images coming from Gaza on Monday, with attention focused on hospitals. Hundreds are trapped inside as a battle rages outside. Israeli forces have encircled the Shifa hospital, as they claim it's sitting atop a Hamas command center. Meanwhile, Gaza Health Ministry spokesman Ashraf Al-Khidra, who is inside the Shifa hospital, said 32 patients have died in the past 3 days. This includes 3 newborn babies as a result of the siege of the hospital and the cutoff of its power. For their part, Israel has released video of its IDF soldiers delivering some 300 liters of fuel to the hospital. However, they say that Hamas fighters prevented hospital staff from collecting it. Now, VOA cannot independently verify this claim, though Israel accuses Hamas of diverting fuel from hospitals and other humanitarian services to fuel generators used to power ventilation systems and bring electricity to the network of tunnels used by the Hamas fighters and leaders. The situation at other Gaza hospitals is similar.
There is no service for pediatric patients in the northern area. 5 kids in the pediatric ICU left alone in Rantisa Hospital, and we don't know what's going on with them. The communication were lost, so they might be dead or alive. So now in Shifa Hospital, they cannot deal with the dead bodies. There is a tenth of dead bodies back in the hospital. Stray dogs were seen attacking the dead bodies, so the dignity for dead people are lost now.
That's Dr. Mohammed Kandil, an emergency department physician in Gaza. All this as large plumes of smoke could be seen billowing up from Lebanese towns near the border with Israel on Monday, after Israel said it was poised to impose order on the Lebanese front. Hostilities spiked there on Sunday, with Hezbollah wounding civilians in a cross-border missile attack. Israel said its air force and artillery struck Hezbollah and other targets in Lebanon in response, saying it was holding the group and the Beirut government responsible for hostilities. Residents of villages and towns close to the Lebanese border have evacuated southward, and with Gaza border communities hit by Hamas emptied, it makes for some 200,000 internally displaced Israelis, according to Israeli government officials. Many southern Lebanese have also fled northward for safety. And as he stressed that his country will continue its military operations in Gaza until it defeats Hamas, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu addressed speculation on Sunday on a possible deal to free more than 200 hostages kidnapped by the militant group on October 7th. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the details.
A day after dozens of Arab leaders held an emergency meeting in Saudi Arabia and strongly condemned the Israeli military offensive in Gaza, White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan appeared on ABC, underlining the United States' position on Tel Aviv's war against Hamas.
We believe in the importance of the laws of war, which means taking every possible measure to protect civilians. At the same time, we will continue to stand behind the proposition that Israel has the right to defend itself against terrorist attacks.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who was interviewed Sunday on CNN, was asked to comment on U.S. Secretary of State's Antony Blinken's recent remarks that too many Palestinians have been killed in Gaza.
I think any civilian loss is a tragedy, and the blame should be placed squarely on Hamas because it prevents them from leaving the war zone, sometimes at gunpoint. It fired on the safe zone and the safe corridor that we enacted.
Separately, Netanyahu addressed the speculation about a possible deal for the release of the hostages kidnapped by Hamas on October 7. His remarks aired on NBC's Meet the Press program.
Extraordinary work that the IDF is doing, putting pressure on the Hamas leadership. That's the one thing that might create a deal. And if a deal is available, well, we'll talk about it when it's there. We'll announce it if it's achieved.
The prime minister added that when the war is over, the overall military responsibility of Gaza will remain in the hands of Israel, but that it's too early to determine who will govern it.
As far as the civilian management of Gaza, we need to see the following two things. Gaza has to be demilitarized and Gaza has to be de-radicalized. Mm-hmm. And I think so far we haven't seen any Palestinian force, including the Palestinian Authority, that is able to do it.
Meanwhile, on the ground, Palestinian civilians continued fleeing northern Gaza, as several United Nations agencies called for an immediate halt on attacks against hospitals. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Of the southern Israel cities, Sderot is the largest and closest to Gaza. VOA's Arash Sigarchi spoke with the mayor, Alon Davidi.
It's very difficult to explain. Because what we see here, it's all the evil that all the free world, all the normal world, don't want that happen in the world. Hamas, the new ISIS of the world, in 7th of October, show us what's happened if we give him the choice to control Gaza and lead Gaza. In the last 20 years, he programmed this evil, I don't have any normal word to say what they've done for in 7th of October. I think that many of you see the picture that they are murder people, that they are kidnap people, they are do so evil things to the body and to the people, burn people in life, things that we never see from 1948 when the Nazis control the world. This is what's happening in 7th of October. And now we are after 1 month of war, and I hope and I pray and I support the government of Israel, the Prime Minister and the IDF, that do whatever they can to destroy Hamas and Jihad and throw them from Gaza, because without that we cannot build a normal future to the area.
What was the relation between Palestinian from Gaza and here? Did you have any workers or something like that here?
We have. Actually, the government of Israel give the permission to 20,000 people to get outside from Gaza every day. They work here, they work in Netivot, in Ofakim, in Ashkelon, in Ashdod, this worker. And when I see the picture that beside the terrorists that murder the people, we see simple people that run after them and enjoy them to do the attack on the village and on Sderot, and we see them that they are murder and kidnap babies, for me, you cannot look at Gaza that you have Gaza and Hamas, ISIS. Hamas and Gaza, they are the same. And because that, the first thing that we need to do, it destroyed the Hamas and Jihad. The second is to bring international power of United States, of Europe, of the normal country, of the Arab country, you know, the Abu Dhabi and all this country. And maybe after we'll destroy the Hamas and the Jihad, we can build another future to the area.
a last question. After a grand operation, do you have a hope? Do people come back here?
This is my mission. After the army, we'll do the job, and after we'll see the result. I hope and I know that we will come back. And you know, in the last 10 years, we almost doubled the town, even that we suffer from the terror and from the rocket. My job is now to double again the town, to bring to Sderot thousands of new family, because this is the answer, not just my answer, this is your answer, and this is the answer of the normal people and the good people. Evil, we need to destroy it. And after we destroyed him, the Hamas and the Jihad, we can throw and can groin and continue to groin.
Alon Davidi is mayor of Sderot in southern Israel. He was speaking with VOA's Arash Sigarchi, a managing editor for VOA's Persian service. You're listening to Flashpoint, Global Crisis from the Voice of America. I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Tuberculosis cases are on the rise all over the world. We'll learn more in a few minutes. Now we head to Kyiv to check in on Ukraine's fight against Russia's invasion with Anna Chernikova. She spoke with Lori London, host of VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine.
Lots been going on in the past just couple days, even. Some pretty strong explosions in Kyiv coming under attack for the first time in months over the weekend, according to what we're hearing. You live in Kyiv. What did you experience?
Well, it was quite a stressful Saturday, especially Saturday morning, as I woke up personally of a sound of explosion, and it was quite a strong sound of explosion. It did not sound as a hit, but it sounded as air defense on a missile, particularly because at this point you can already, like, citizens of Kyiv can already, you know, understand what the sound is. And the worst thing is that air raid alarm was not on, so it was very unexpected sound of explosion. No one was ready to that. And the air raid alarm started a couple of minutes after the explosion. According to the air defense and air forces of Ukraine, Russians attack the capital with a ballistic missile. The reason why air raid alarm was not on is still investigated. As a result of this attack, no casualties were reported and no hits to critical or residential infrastructure. However, 18 residential private buildings are reported damaged, as well as private enterprise facility, and the damages were caused by the debris of the missile.
And then an interesting situation in Kherson. This attack in Kyiv came on an important milestone.
Yes, exactly. Saturday was November 11th, and this was an anniversary, 1 year anniversary of the liberation of the city of Kherson from Russian occupation. Last year, Ukrainian armed forces managed to liberate the city, and it was one of the most successful counter-offensive battles for the city and the most successful counter-offensive results of last year. And Russian forces shelled the city of Kherson quite seriously on this anniversary day. According to the Ukrainian officials and local authorities of the city of Kherson, two people were injured and one person was killed during these attacks. The attacks were targeting mostly a central part of the city and residential areas and private sector, where also residential buildings are located. And unfortunately, there are a lot of damages as well due to the debris and due to the heat. Also, it was reported that Russian forces hit the central library in the city of Kherson, also in the central part of the city. And according to the reports, rescue team, it took almost 2 hours to the rescue team to stop the fire in the building. The building is seriously damaged, but no casualties were reported from that site.
Any updates on the front line? I know things are really heating up and President Zelensky's warning everyone to plan for that.
Yeah, well, situation is extremely difficult, extremely tough along the front line. Two main parts of the front line remain under the most intensive fire, and battlefield is quite hot in that areas. We're talking about Kherson region and we're talking about Donetsk region. However, Ukrainian armed forces reported that Ukrainian army managed to actually raise, as it was reported, the Ukrainian flag in the gray zone of the Kharkiv region, which is also on the border of Kharkiv region and Donetsk region. It was reported that this zone was under both Russian and Ukrainian control. It was changing, and this territory is called gray zone for since the last liberation of Kharkiv region last year by the Ukrainian forces. So at this point, this area is under Ukrainian control, and it was also confirmed by the Ukrainian officials that Ukrainian military controls this area but is not constantly staying in that area. Also, there are no particular changes, at least confirmed changes, by the Ukrainian armed forces from Kherson region or Donetsk region. The city of Avdiivka remains under very high defense actions by the Ukrainian forces, and Russian forces are trying to advance in that area also very intensively. Similar situation in the Kherson region, but there are talks that it might be soon confirmed that Ukrainian forces had certain success in there. However, at this point, we cannot verify this information independently, and we cannot confirm any movements forward by the Ukrainian forces either. Last but not least, the area of Mykolaiv region and Kharkiv region, these areas are so-called pre-frontline areas. They are constantly under very heavy shelling, and both Mykolaiv and Kharkiv region citizens are under constant attacks.
Anna Chernikova reporting for VOA from Kyiv. Thank you so much for the update.
Thank you.
And now to the Pacific, where U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has emphasized the U.S.'s commitment to its allies in Asia and the Indo-Pacific region during a news conference with South Korea's defense minister. The AP's Charles de la Desma reports.
Our deterrence commitment to the ROK remains ironclad. That includes the full range of our nuclear, conventional, and missile defense capabilities. And today, during the security consultative meeting, Minister Shin and I discussed shared opportunities to strengthen the alliance even further.
Austin says he and his South Korean counterpart had discussed continued destabilizing actions by the DPRK that threatens the regional security environment, as well as Russian activities that undermine the rules-based international order. Austin added the recent U.S. military buildup in the Middle East in response to the latest Israel-Hamas war will not compromise its strength in the Indo-Pacific region. I'm Charles de la Desma.
Elsewhere in Pacific region diplomacy news, U.S. President Joe Biden and Chinese President Xi Jinping will meet this Wednesday on the sidelines of the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit in California. U.S. officials aren't expecting any breakthroughs that would improve U.S.-China ties, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul.
When Joe Biden and Xi Jinping meet this week for the first time in a year, U.S. officials say a main goal of the summit is to simply keep both sides talking. The United States wants to ensure tensions do not spiral into conflict, and there is plenty of tension. Here, a Chinese fighter jet approaches and fires flares near a U.S. aircraft in the East China Sea in July. The Pentagon reported nearly 200 of these encounters in the last 2 years. In January, this Chinese surveillance balloon floated over the U.S. mainland. A U.S. jet eventually shot down the balloon off the coast of South Carolina, but not before sending U.S.-China ties into a tailspin. Now, relations appear to be stabilizing. Xi has received multiple U.S. delegations, where he has spoken more optimistically about the relationship.
I have said many times, including to several presidents, that we have 1,000 reasons to improve China-U.S. relations, but not one reason to ruin them.
Domestic pressure explains some of Xi's softer diplomacy. China's post-COVID economic growth has been much slower than expected. Xi was also likely caught off guard following Russia's invasion of Ukraine, says analyst Amanda Shao.
We saw the narrative of democracies versus authoritarian countries, and that put China on the side of the authoritarian countries. And so that was a sort of rallying that created a bit of a rallying effect for Washington's and its allies and partners to form a bit of an anti-China coalition.
But things may become tougher from here. A coming vote in Taiwan could result in the re-election of a government that is highly suspicious of Beijing. And with the U.S. presidential election campaign heating up, many analysts say now may be a rare moment for the United States and China to inject stability into their relationship. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
And finally, a look at what could be a global crisis in the making. Cases of tuberculosis continued to rise around the world last year as disruption to health services caused by the COVID-19 pandemic set back efforts to fight the disease. This according to the latest annual report from the World Health Organization. Henry Ridgewell reports.
Despite being treatable and curable, tuberculosis, or TB, remains one of the world's deadliest infectious diseases, causing an estimated 1.3 million deaths in 2022, according to the latest World Health Organization figures. That's a reduction of around 19% on the previous year. But there was a small increase in the number of cases to an estimated 10.6 million. Some 40% of people living with TB are undiagnosed and untreated. The COVID-19 pandemic, which began in 2020, overwhelmed health services in many parts of the world, and TB diagnosis and treatment levels plummeted. Dr. Luchika Ditu is executive director of the Stop TB Partnership, based in Geneva.
Fortunately, the incidence through TB is growing. We used to have a decline of 2% per year. And then due to COVID, we have now an increase for the last 2 years, 21 and 22, of almost 4%.
The World Health Organization estimates COVID-related disruptions resulted in almost 500,000 excess deaths from TB in the 3 years from 2020 to 2022. The report also reveals a concerning lack of progress in some areas. Again, Dr. Luchika Ditu.
We have a pretty difficult situation on people with drug-resistant TB as well as childhood TB. So drug-resistant TB, short of 200,000 people were diagnosed and put in treatment. And exactly as WHO said, 2 out of 5 people with drug-resistant TB had access to drug-resistant TB treatment.
But the fight against TB is getting back on track. The number of cases diagnosed globally last year was 7.5 million, the highest ever recorded. Again, Dr. Luchika Ditu of the Stop TB Partnership.
This shows that the countries buckled up to recover after COVID and even jump above the level before COVID.
A promising TB vaccine made by GlaxoSmithKline is currently in the final stage of trials, and more than a dozen other vaccines are undergoing testing.
We need a vaccine. So that will be the game changer. What it implies, I tell you what it implies. It implies to have either a vaccine that works perfectly on different age groups or several vaccines to complement each other.
The 19% fall in deaths from TB is still far short of the World Health Organization's target of a 75% reduction by 2025. Funding also fell short, reaching less than half of the WHO target of at least $13 billion for TB diagnosis, treatment and prevention services in 2022. Governments committed to spending $22 billion a year on TB by 2027 at a special UN meeting in September. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
And that's going to wrap up today's program. There is more VOA coverage 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com, and across our social media platforms. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thanks for listening. Until tomorrow, I'm Steve Karish.
Stay up to date with VOA Podcasts. Each weekday, International Edition covers the world's biggest stories while Flashpoint Iran and Flashpoint Ukraine examine their respective regions in depth every week.